Good morning. You listen to FloorDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, my guest is John Ball, who's managing director with Stiefel Nicholas. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kemp. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, good to be with you. I know you've been traveling a lot, and all of the publicly traded flooring companies have reported their first quarter results. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, though, let's just talk about the economic conditions that are affecting the flooring business. Obviously, we've seen where the builder market is performing actually a little bit better than it's been performing, and it's probably the strongest we've seen it perform since the recession, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but I always look at flooring in three general buckets, commercial, and then two buckets within residential, both the builder market and the repair, remodel market, or retail. And, you know, the big changes were on the commercial side, and we could talk about that in a second. But, yes, the builder market, whether it's multifamily or single family, has been sort of the leader in terms of strength, of percentage growth in the last several years. And that really continues, although it's a minority piece of the business relative to the size of the repair and remodel market.
Right.
What's interesting, Kemp, though, is we're seeing single-family starts now outpace multifamily,
yeah.
And that has very positive implications both for volume and mix. So very encouraged by what I'm seeing on the housing start front.
Let me point out real quickly, a single-family home just has more square footage. So if you're building single-family homes, you're putting down more flooring.
It is, and it's better than 2-to-1.
Yeah.
And then, well, I can't give you an exact number on the mix. The mix is better as well, so the price per unit's higher. So it's very significant.
Okay. And then on remodel replacement, how's that business doing?
Well, you know, that's been the laggard in this so-called economic recovery we've had. I cover the general building products space, and we've seen, a material improvement in that market, you know, course of, 4.5 months now we're into this year. Some of that, though, may be weather-related for a lot of companies that I cover that do outdoor materials. Obviously, most flooring is inside. So it's a little hard to tell if that strength is just pull-forward demand because we had a very mild winter and allowed for a lot of construction activity in areas of the country where normally you shut down. You really don't hear that kind of strength in flooring in general, although I think it's modestly better. Obviously, carpet is still a laggard, and the hard surfaces are growing, and I think the net-net is we're seeing that 3-4% overall growth. But, gosh, we'd like to see something a little stronger than that, particularly in the repair and remodel market. We just haven't seen it yet.
Well, existing home sales are strong, and they've always said that when a home changes hands, up to $25,000 is spent either before or after the sale on some kind of interior investment. So that may be part of what's going on there.
Yeah, you know, and if you watch existing home sales data monthly, and I don't have it etched in my brain, but it has been fairly choppy the last 6 to 8 monthly reports. But, you know, looking at a sort of longer tail, 4 or 5 years, it has improved, and yet the repair remodel market's not followed. That raises the specter of the old pent-up demand theory, and I think that's true, but there are other factors at play here. I read something interesting the other day, and this was more like a 15-year comparison, but it said that 4%, I think 400 basis points of total income for the average American has gone to increases in health care and education and lodging. In other words, we're eroding or eating at the amount of money left over for disposable personal income for discretionary items,
yeah,
like flooring makeovers, if you will. And so, you know, we just haven't seen that recovery that existing home sales data might suggest. You can be bullish and say, well, there's all this pent-up demand, or you could say, there are reasons why the consumer's been stubborn. They just don't have the money to spend. Although everyday home prices go up, jobs get a little better, you know, those are tailwinds. Financing might be getting a little bit easier on the margin. That's been a huge headwind as well.
And millennials are paying off some of their education debt, and that's helping out too. But real quick, you mentioned something that changed in the commercial market. What were you referring to?
Well, you know, this has been an area that, again, has been relatively strong.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to get feedback in the fourth quarter, and indeed, it arguably got worse in the first quarter, that, projects are getting put on hold. It probably relates to the financial turmoil at the start of the year. There was a lot of angst, and still is today, about what's going on, particularly globally. We're so interconnected now. You know, the other underlying theme that I think has been impacting commercial is we just don't have the kind of revenue growth recovery of this economy that we've had in prior recoveries. But if corporations, businesses, small, big, aren't growing the top line, it generally says they're not in need of extra space, extra people. And I think that's an underlying current that's hurting commercial demand overall. You add on top of that then this sort of financial mini-crisis there in January and February, which has been rectified by the recovery of stock prices, but I think psyche is still damaged somewhat. And I think CFOs sort of have their finger on the pause button.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. Well, let's get into these companies. Let's start with Mohawk. Actually, Mohawk probably had the most stellar performance, earnings per share up 40%. Specifically, their sales were $2.2 billion, up 15%. They made $172 million. That's a pretty nice performance. How much of that do you think is acquisition related, and how much of that's just organic?
Yeah, so they do divulge all of that in there. So you got a lot of currency issues, you got acquisition issues, yeah. and days short. I think the first quarter had one less shipping day than last year. So there's a lot of noise, and when you adjust all those things out, they're right there in that mid-single digit kind of pace, and that's been the case for the last several quarters. So trying to get at really what's organic or real, it's been in that mid-single digit pace. Wide divergence amongst their product categories, with ceramic and the hard surfaces in general quite strong. Carpet, I dare say, is probably flat to slightly negative.
Okay, even with them, because you made a point in one of your reports that you thought maybe their carpet was a little better than the market.
That was a reference to the commercial and carpet tile specifically, where I think they've been attacking lower price points aggressively. That's really where the carpet tile market, in my view, is expanding, is particularly on, you know, sort of $15 and under price points. So I think they're playing fairly aggressively there. I don't think on the residential side they're outperforming the market at all. They are on a cost basis. Input costs are down. Their margins are excellent in the residential carpet market, but I think their units are challenged like everyone's.
Well, as we know, you know, Jeff Loberbaum is motivated by continuing to acquire. It'd be interesting to see what's next, right?
Well, yeah, and you kind of look at the balance sheet, which used the leverage ratio of total debt to trailing 12-month EBITDA. And when that number gets down to around 2 or below, which it does once they start generating all that cash and they don't acquire something, that's when they tend to move. So we'll see. I do expect them to acquire something in 2016. You know, the world's their oyster. They've been chasing a lot of things around the globe and, you know, in several different product categories. So I have no idea what they're looking at and what they'll do, but I'm confident they'll do something.
Not only are they the largest flooring company, they're the, you know, the largest in tile, the largest in rugs, and up there in the top 2 or 3 in all the other categories, so they're a major player.
Yes, they are. And, you know, the formula has been fairly consistent. Obviously, the cost of money is very inexpensive, one of the benefits of low interest rates. So almost any transaction is, quote-unquote, accretive to earnings per share because the financing costs are so low. But Jeff and his team have been adept at bringing these businesses in, and in some cases feeding them capital, in some cases taking capital away and starving costs. But he's very effective at integrating these businesses with the existing pieces he has to work with and increasing shareholder value. So, you know, they're the largest player in ceramic tile in the world, and yet they're well under 10% market share. So there are opportunities still in front of them.
All right, let's talk about Armstrong, just because a lot of news there. Now they're traded differently. They're not part of the ceilings business, so it's Armstrong Flooring, AFI. And, you know, their first quarter, sales up 9.6%. And the big news there is their hardwood sales up 17.4%, and their resilient up 4.5%. So that's real interesting on the hardwood side, because, you know, they a year or two ago had moved out of China, had moved back over into Kentucky and focused on building out their engineered hardwood assets. That says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think what it speaks to a little bit, and we always have to be careful of percentage ups because, yeah. While that's the way we look at the world, it matters what you did or didn't do in the year prior comparison. And as we know, Armstrong had challenges in the engineered wood capacity, productivity end of things. So the improvement you've seen there is they're in much better productive capability, service capability. They're still probably not where they want to be, but their distributors and retailers tell me that they're improving. So that's a check plus. They still have the LVT sort of ramp going on.
Right.
Most of what they're selling now is still sourced, but they expect that Lancaster line to come on. I think that's been a little bit slower, frankly, than they had hoped, but there should be benefits from that plant going forward.
Yeah, some of that growth on the resilience side might be filling up the pipeline because they've gotten, I think, good distribution on this new Diamond 10 technology product they've come out with. So I think they're shipping that in the marketplace, and so that always brings
They're very excited about that product. They think they have a differentiated product that has performance characteristics that make it superior to other LVT. It's hard for me, a financial analyst sitting in Richmond, Virginia, to make those judgments, but that's what I hear in the trade.
Yeah, that's right. Let's quick before we run out of time, move to Tile, T-I-L-E, that's Interface. Their sales were down 6.1% on a year-over-year basis, but their earnings were slightly up. They made $12.9 million versus $12.3 million last year.
Yeah, and they've certainly got a lot of currency issues in their revenue figures, which, by the way, with the dollar having recently weakened, who knows where it will go going forward, but relative to the euro, those headwinds will abate. The margin story at Interfaith has been phenomenal. Gross margins, particularly, now some of that's input cost, but a lot of it is the plant efficiencies and mix. The challenge they've had is I think we've now had three straight quarters where orders have been flat to down. Some of it speaks to the comments we were talking about at the outset of the commercial marketplace here being kind of put on hold. That's frustrating. They are trying to make inroads into hospitality and some of these non-office markets and get more aggressive. And while I'm sure that will benefit them in time, the reality is that the office market is still very critical to their business, and we've seen some sluggishness there. So very good margin structure, but orders have been stubborn.
Mm-hmm. Recent news on them, they went to the Hospitality Design Show last week in Las Vegas, and they started to show some of their better customers some LVT products. So here they were, only a modular tile company, and now it looks like they're looking into getting into LVT.
Yeah, kind of harkens me back to the days when customers wanted broadloom and tile, and they felt they had to be in broadloom. Now they were manufacturing broadloom, and ultimately they decided not to do that. Now they're being pressured again, I presume, by customers to offer that package. Obviously, they'll source LVT and not make it, so that's a significant difference. Yeah, I've been in a few hotel rooms lately. I have a bad habit of being in hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And you've seen that mix of LVT and carpet in some areas, even carpet tile. So, it's an interesting dynamic. It tells you kind of where the design trade is, where the end users are. I think if you can bring a palette of products to the table, it may help them get a sale here or there. So there's going to be a lot of LVT capacity, as we know, out of Asia that's going to need to find a home because of all the productive capacity being built in the United States. So it shouldn't be an issue finding, attractively priced LVT source. So it'll be interesting to see how that transpires going forward.
But the commercial market does lean toward favoring domestically produced products, so it'd be interesting to see how it'll shake out.
It will.
All right, John, well, it's great to talk to you. Appreciate so much your insight. Again, talking to John Ball, the Managing Director at Stiefel Nicholas, about the publicly traded flooring companies, and you've been listening to Kemphar and FloorDaily.net.